And we're live with the 311th episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hi. Was that it? Right? Like, that's all you want me to say? Just kidding. I'm breaking up our, like, we're just at it today. Welcome to another episode. Excited to be back. 311. There's a lot to talk about. We've had guests for the past month, basically. And so it hasn't been just me and Ken talking about industry news, what we're currently seeing. Before we dive into it, I mean, I do want to get into your opinion on Moltbook and OpenClockN. And I know we want to talk about skills and a few other things from a coding perspective. But before we get there, we do have opportunities coming up. The seats are selling for all three of the courses, and now there's a fourth. We just got notified, but that's not live yet. All three of the courses that are available to you for signups. So first up is KernelCon. That's the beginning of April. That's Harnessing LLMs for Application Security. That will be, there are new modules. There's going to be new modules for all of these courses. But then after that is the full next-gen AppSec and Secure Code Review, the Black Hat edition at Singapore, Black Hat Asia. That is selling. That's the combination of Secure Code Review process plus harnessing LLMs and using LLMs. We're going to dig into even more modules there. Ken and I were talking today about the new modules that we need to add for these courses, you know, because it's been 2 months since we taught it last, and AI changes literally so much.
Everything changed.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Like the new Moltbook, the new OpenClaw stuff, the ability to orchestrate has become a lot easier. Like, you know, from Claude Code, we're now like progressing out on into this agentic architecture and this ability. So like, we got to be able to harness that, right? And Ken and I are using that on a day-to-day basis. And then DEF CON is the last one that's available right now. So that's after Black Hat Asia, DEF CON Singapore. We'll be teaching harnessing LLMs there for a couple of days. And again, right, like you want to know how to actually utilize these tools for application security. This is where you can learn and where you have this opportunity. Reach out to us if you have questions on it. Slack is always open. Ken and I are perpetually online, I guess. It's hard for us to get off. Yeah. So if you're on Slack, you have questions about any of these, reach out. And we did just get notification that the course got picked up. The next gen course got picked up for Black Hat USA as well. So we'll be there, you know, because what we needed is to spend an extra 4 days in Las Vegas in the middle of the summer.
I'm gonna love that. That's my month. I spend three. I always do three trips during August to Vegas. So that's gonna be a lot of Vegas.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm thinking about staying off strip this time, but just All right. Outside of that, we will also be at B-Sides San Francisco and RSA. That's upcoming. We'll be running a panel at B-Sides San Francisco. At the very least, so far, we have Clint will be on the panel with us. Kelly McDermott as well. I think Asta Singel will be the third panelist that we have besides you and I. For that, it'll be a good time. I mean, I know a lot of what we've been talking about on the podcast is going to come up, especially because things are progressing so quickly. I'm interested to talk with Asta and Kelly about how they're utilizing AI in those larger organizations. I know Clint's got a lot of opinions there as well, so it should be a good time.
Yeah,
it will cool. Be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's everything that's on the calendar right now. I'm not making it down to CactusCon. I've got some team members that are going this year, but I'm not going to be there. I know we've traditionally tried to do that one in the past. I don't know if you've got any other conferences you're going to, Ken.
No, I've actually been pretty quiet online. I've limited my travel, and there is a good reason. I've been really heads down with the team. Our platform has basically changed overnight. And there's something I did want to announce, and so I will in a sec, but no, the only thing I'll before I get to that, the only thing I'll mention about training is I've said this before and I'll say it again, and I apologize about it, and I'll apologize again now. On Slack, when I get messages, we've got a free tier, so those messages inevitably like disappear. I'm only saying that because this is what happens. People ask me for training. They send it via DMs typically. I lose track of those. So if you're one of those people who had asked, and I think there were like at least three people who asked for their companies to be trained virtually. If you still want to do that, just hit me up. That's all I'll add. It's just please, sorry, sorry I forgot. Sorry, I lost track of the messages, but if you do, please hit me up again. All right. So, thing I want to announce, Seth, you already know about this. You were one of the earliest users starting like 6 months ago or something like that. So you've watched the progression of DeepScan, but we announced it today that it's generally available, and you can get one free scan. I would say probably if you're interested, hurry up because we are going to be gating this pretty heavily. It does cost us money. It does, we have a certain amount of concurrent runs we'll run. It's not like we actually have hard, it's not things we're not false, a false sense of what is the marketing thing where they do like a fake, they put like a fake
A
cap or
limited
fake limitation on
access.
the.
Yeah.
It's not that. We actually have hard things that we'll butt up against in terms of limits. So yeah, if you want to try it, get your because obviously we want to prioritize our paying customers. So get your request in. But here's what's amazing. Why would you even want to try it, right? Okay. I put in like a post today about this, but it took us like nearly a year to build this thing, right? From start to finish. It's crazy good. Like I can't, you have to just try it. And I think what we'll do next is start scanning some popular open source, because I think that was a really popular play on like Expo did that where they're like, oh, we'll scan some stuff and we'll put out the results. And they, so we'll probably do something like that because what we're finding is like, it's insane. So first of all, you've seen it. It looks more like a consultant built your report. So that's straight away pretty amazing. The context that we gather about an application, you both have access to, like to view, and that's really helpful, but we use it in other parts of our analysis, like think like pull and merge requests. So every time you get a scan on that code base, it just infuses and enhances the scans elsewhere in our product. But what's really cool about it is we're finding things that humans find. We're not producing noise like old SaaS tools did. And what's really crazy is, and of course, this is the one that blew my mind. We have a bunch of customers. They had like Sneak, they had like check marks, they had other stuff that they've been running for years and years and years. Different vendors coming in years and years and years. Dude, and consultants testing their code base. Nobody found the things we're finding, and they're valid. It's like crazy complex authorization issues, like bypasses for multi-site tenancy, like pretty much anything that is, we would normally have to have a human being find. And this is why we had that. Like, I'll tie this all together for the audience because you and I spent about like 12, 15 minutes talking about where the trajectory of everything's going. And after seeing these scans improve, 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 technology improve, improve, and then especially the last few weeks of we did made some super squirrel secret stuff that I can't even talk about. We made some huge changes in the last few weeks, and I could tell you. It's just bananas. Like, I don't see a world in which I call it primitive SaaS because that's the best way to think of old SaaS tools is primitive. They're just primitive. And anyways, it's incredible. Like, I'm just saying you forget it. People try it. You'll see what I mean. Yeah, it's nuts. So really excited about it. But yeah, definitely get your request in if you want to try it because you're going to be on a wait list pretty soon.
It's a yeah. And let's talk about that a little bit. The reason that we were late actually starting in today, right? Because we abstracted it out. Like, Ken and I have talked about DeepScan for a while. Like, I've been giving feedback since the early days of yeah, of them putting this together, and I'm very impressed with it, right? Like, obviously, like, it's the sort of thing that I've needed as a consultant for a while to help speed up my own analysis. But in general, this is the direction that AI seems to be heading, and AppSec, ProdSec in general, is back to the use of tools to make consultants more efficient. Now, we've always done that, right? Like, we have Burp Suite, we have other things. We're not using curl to make requests over and over and over again. We're not writing HTTP, right? Like, that sort of thing. But when, yeah. So when you and I got into the industry, right? So 25, 30 years ago, the model for application security, which wasn't really even a thing then, but the model for security assessments was, we use a tool, we do false positive analysis, we check everything that's coming out of the tool, any extra time we use to go on to other things. And this is how we built our secure code review methodology, was based upon this idea, right? There's tools that speed up certain portions. They're really good at discovering, you know, the primitive tools were really good at discovering things like cross-site scripting and SQL injection and those like big scary security issues back in the day. Since then, the reliance on those tools has faded. Like, we still run those things, we're still doing those checks. Now it's become commonplace for a scanner like Burp, or, you know, pick your dynamic scanner, pick your static analysis tool to find those things. But it hasn't been, those tools haven't been as good at finding those large, scary threats, right? Or exploits, or whatever it is. It's taken a person, it's taken a lot more time to actually identify those things. But with the advent of AI, and what you're doing, what we're trying to do as a consultancy, is utilize AI to actually bridge that gap again. We're going to become more dependent on tools, and consultants and experts are going to have to take a look at what's coming out of those to, again, do validation. But I feel like I'm going to get pushed more into a validation role again, like I was early in my career, as opposed to, man, I'm going in and I'm manipulating Burp requests day in, day out to actually find these vulnerabilities, because it's inefficient for me to do that when I can have an agent go do it in 10 minutes and discover all the things. And then all I have to do is go and spot check, as opposed to, you know, putting in intruder requests and making like thousands and thousands of requests to identify those vulnerabilities. And so I feel like we're reliving what we did early in our career. I don't know if you're feeling the same thing.
No, I do. Because this is part of what we were chatting about. It's like, yeah. So to structure this a bit. So one is, the role of AppSec is obviously changing, but before I talk about that, I want to talk about the tooling itself. And we're going to show today what skills are, why they're useful. We're going to talk about the registry that TESOL put out and show you what that looks like. TESOL's a company by Guy Podjarny, former Sneak, and not a security company, by the way. And we're going to talk about malicious skills because of obviously Paul McCarty's research and the stuff he's been putting out the last couple of days. But before we show any of that or get further down the line, I want to just talk about the tooling for a second. Like, in the past few months, okay, and this is important to distinguish too, is like, something has changed in the last few months, right? And it's not necessarily that models, frontier models, are getting better, right? Like, on some level, some people say they're stagnating. They're kind of maybe even in some ways getting worse, even if that's whatever. I don't have a thought on that, but I can tell you that I don't think the models themselves are getting so much more. I think they're improving, but I don't think the models are like making these huge leaps, but we're seeing huge leaps in the tooling. And why is that? Orchestration and ways. So orchestration is getting better, which means all the tooling around everything and the options that they give you to make things work better and how the tools themselves just natively work. And I think you've probably seen this. I know that the developer of Claude Code had recently talked about how he pretty much uses a vanilla you know, set up with Cloud Code, except for he's got his own skills and stuff that he runs, but he uses that to build Cloud Code. And so it's, you know, you're seeing the tooling around these AI coding, whatever, just improving astronomically. Okay. And what has that led to? Well, like I can tell you in the most, cause I see the range, I see the range. I'm sure you see the range, but I definitely see the range of from hip, tiny little startup doing all vibe coding to like enterprises trying to even grapple with like, what even is AI? Okay. And for the folks that are like fully leaning into, and it's not just small startups, it's actually large orgs that I'm seeing. Like we can see a shift in the amount of pull requests we're analyzing. In one case, a company went up by 26% in 1 month. In another case, a company went up 837% in 1 month. That's PRs. Okay.
Yeah.
Something has shifted to the point where people are actually allowing these agents to go pretty hands off. They're giving it kind of a set of instructions and bullet points, not even like a laid out plan. Why? We'll talk about skills and superpowers, but that's part of it. And the tooling getting better. And then they just walk away. And they're doing this with like 5-6 agents at a time. The volume that we're seeing is just, it's insane. It's exploding. And I'm saying that because I realize that now people are more comfortable going hands off and allowing agents to just do the work. And they're using mm-hmm. other agents like maybe if you develop with Claude Code, maybe they'll use Codex. Maybe they'll use Copilot on GitHub. You'll use a set of and dry run security, you know, for the security aspects of things, since those don't catch security flaws. And you have all these different AI essentially agents doing the work to correct any mistakes by the other AI agent. How that works out long term, we'll find out. But so far, seems like it's going pretty well for people and they're shipping at a much higher velocity. Okay, so why does that matter? That's where it gets into where is AppSec going? And just to round out that thought before we get into anything else, my thought is AppSec is going to have a moment where you're going to see a separation of the knowledge workers and the skilled workers from the cleanup crew. That's the first thing. The second thing I predict is that the knowledge/skilled workers are going to spend most of their time working on things like reasoning drift, context infusion, risk management, and higher level, higher order things. Obviously, doing code reviews, probably pretty minimal, frankly, in terms of like, you know, working for with or within an organization. Consultants, I think you've got your own thoughts on how that's going to change. So I'm not going to even broach that subject. But, you know, I'm going to pause because I said a lot of things, but I see everything changing overnight. And just in the last few months, everything has really again shifted and the velocity is just out of control in to a degree. So, yeah.
It is, right? And because I can pull back the layers a little bit because I know that, you know, a lot of consultancies are dealing with this and they're trying to figure out exactly, especially like the expert level, right? Like, you know, I was shocked. I think we talked about this a little bit last year because you and I have seen this coming, right? Like, obviously you've been building a product with LLMs and with AI. We were teaching the course last year at DEF CON about harnessing LLMs. And I remember running into a small kind of compliance style pen testing firm last year at DEF CON and Black Hat that basically was asking what they should even be doing with AI, right? Like they hadn't even like started like, oh, well, I know our guys asked ChatGPT to format like things, but that was about the level that they were at. And I was shocked, right? Like, anyway, but I can pull back the curtain. Like the experts are really digging in because you do have things like Expo from an external, like dynamic perspective, the speed of actually discovery and other things and development is making us much more efficient. Like we've been playing, like initially, like when I started doing the dynamic stuff, I started playing with basically a chain of different tools, right? Like I started to use Goose Square. I think it's KeyPath. Can't remember, whatever, right? Like I think it's Square, something like that. Goose is basically an agent that you can run similar to Claude Code, right? But is more for kind of DevOps style, almost like, anyway, so like I had Goose that was connected to Playwright, like the MCP server, that was then connected to Burp Suite as its proxy that I was using to crawl, identify vulnerabilities, and actually like as an added layer of discovery options and just feedback, really quick feedback as to what it was identifying. And it did an okay job, but it would, you know, drift off and like actually identify things or go outside the scope pretty easily of what I was trying to actually do. What that's equated to, and like on my side, like at Redpoint, we're building something internally where it's called Surveyor that is doing dynamic analysis for us. But we've shifted from its block. There you go. Right. I knew it was some, you know, square block, whatever, right? We've shifted from, okay, we're trying to do like very like deep level analysis. We're still doing our deep level analysis, but as we build out our next generation of testing, it's become more about context and it's become more about reasoning drift. It's become more about prompt crafting. It's become more about operationalizing and observability of LLMs and what they're doing and what percentage of testing and what percentage of false positives is actually acceptable, right? As opposed to, right, like, oh, we're doing all of these manual tests, which is what has been our traditional effort. I feel like that's going to shift. What has taken us in the past, 6 weeks to do is probably going to change. And we're going to have to rethink the model of, okay, we now need more assessments because we're going to be competing against other AIs, right? And other AI systems that are doing very, very similar things. And I know, so we're using dry run, to be frank. And I know if you look at the percentage of pull requests, and we're a small org, so we're pulling to master or pushing to master way too often, right? But we're getting into this model of using pull requests, even if it is a single person, just because we wanted to see what that drift looks like for us. And I know over the last 2 months, our pull request rate has gone from, we're building something and it's only, 4 or 5 pull requests a month to hundreds of pull requests a month.
Yeah, because literally, you're not the only one. We're seeing that with literally everybody. It's well, at least anybody that's installed with us, obviously.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like the volume is nuts. And it is a thing where you do. And this is like, it's funny because, it's like the market has always kind of balked at the prices of consulting. So, and I'm thinking about what you're saying and I'm like, well, they kind of though had to suck it up, right? Like if someone came to you and said, it's going to cost, I don't know, I'm just going to make up numbers, 10 grand for 2 weeks or whatever, right? Or I actually don't even know if that's, I'm making things up. So let's say 10 grand for 2 weeks. It's like, yeah, probably if you go with another consultancy, it's going to look somewhat similar to that number. It might be a little less, a little bit more. And then it comes down to like, who introduced you? Do they trust you more because of your connection? Or like, do you do more publicly or have like, I don't know, do you have other things that like, I don't know, open source work, talks, things that, that's kind of what distinguished a lot of like consultancies from one another. But the price was pretty much always relatively within the same kind of, you've got your artisanal kind of companies, they always charge a little bit more. And then if you have like a really special project, usually it's a little bit more, but it's relatively. And so now I'm like looking at it thinking like, okay, the consultancy that embraces this is going to be able to like, not to, I'm not saying this like in a bad way. I'm saying it in like a how, let's look at McDonald's, wildly successful company. Why? Well, they standardized how sort of like a kitchen works, right? And a lot of other cool things, but I'm not the expert, but that was like initially a big deal was how they sort of just made everything really cookie cutter, uniform, process driven and efficient. And you get the same result every single time. And they're like, that's what works, because it drives costs down. People get what they want. They pay less, takes less time. The consultancies that embrace this, I feel like are going to be the winners. The ones that like wait too long and are like, well, I don't know. I just still trust my old fashioned you know, deterministic, whatever, and this, that, or the other. And we've had our same process for 5 years. It's been working great. Like, you're screwed. Like, you need to catch up. That's how I see the world. But,
as a business owner, that scares me a bit, right? To be honest, because it is forcing changes into what has worked for the past 10, 15 years, right? Do I need a cadre of consultants anymore, right? And what sort of person do I need to be that consultant and be the one that can actually manipulate those prompts, that can actually drive those tools? Because the tools don't exist. We're having to create that from scratch, like you are at DryRun, like we are over here. There's some things that we can use for very specific pieces, but the combination of deterministic tools with LLM output and the skills, like, and I know we should probably switch over and talk about those and have you demo it really quick, because that is pretty interesting. It's causing changes to the industry, and it's going to disrupt AppSec and ProdSec. But I think you're right. Like, I think any organization that is not thinking at least 6 months ahead on how to prove out that efficiency is going to start losing clients. And that's, again, that is my, like, my fear, because that's what we've based our whole consultancy on over the last 5 years, is the boutique idea and being like very artisanal on how we go at, how we find vulnerabilities. I've got a lot of questions. Well, I do feel like, right?
So for that, I do feel like you can maintain the artisanal part as long as you optimize all the non-artisanal aspects, right? So the kind of, the stuff that, these days doesn't really require what doesn't require a human looks very different today than what it did a year ago, as opposed to 3 years ago, as opposed to 5 years ago. These are very different things that, like, only humans could find right now. Mm-hmm. There are still things where you absolutely need a human being involved, right? And that's when I would argue the artisanal sort of, like, highly curated, experts, subject matter experts come into play, is when, you've done the coverage for all of most of the both interesting and whatever else security things need to, like, fall into place. And now it's time to focus on, how do I chain everything together? Like, I think that's going to be an interesting next step, is how do I chain what I've learned about the application together? What weaknesses have I uncovered? This happens all the time where, like we talk about in our manual code review course, where you go through, certain parts of the code base, you see, like, there's something there, you make a note, and then you come back later and you go back through your notes and you look at, like, what are the somethings there, you dig in, you validate. And then what happens is, over time through the assessment, you get to a place where you're like, okay, these three things are valid. I decided, and maybe at the time I looked at them, I didn't go down the rabbit hole, but later I investigated them, I validated them. And hey, by the way, as I'm thinking about it, I've just realized there's a pretty interesting potential critical flaw by chaining those, three or four things together. I think that's where the human being is still, there's still a lot of, and also, like, driving tooling, you still have to drive tooling, you still have to help it along. I think it's going to favor, I think the world is going to favor whoever leans in the quickest, rather than those that kind of stagnate and kind of try to, I've watched people, even today, it blows my mind. There are even still people today who are like, oh no, I don't know about all that. And it's like, well, if you don't know, you better get up to speed really, really quick. The world's shifted underneath your feet.
Yeah. And this is what we've been saying for the last 6 months, is the tools are the worst they're going to be right now. They're only getting better, right? So what's coming out of a specific prompt, of a specific tool, of DryRun, right? Like, we're only going to see improvements given the rate of change and the rate of improvement for most of these AI tools right now. I'm both optimistic and pessimistic at the same time, right, is what it feels like. Because, you know, from a tooling efficiency perspective, I see where it's going. I mean, honestly, like, even just using things like GitHub Copilot and against a repository to help do a code review is massive. And like, we've been using that for a couple of years now, and that feels like it's almost antiquated, because we can automate a lot of that. And, you know, what you're doing at Dryrun, it's automating a lot of that. And so there's no reason for me to have to go in and actually query that. Now it's become more of a validation routine, and then I'm bouncing it off other LLMs to tell me how this trace is actually working to do different things to identify those vulnerabilities and exploits, and whether or not that is something that can be exploited. And then we're starting to talk about the marriage of dynamic to static, right? The tooling that you're doing with the tooling that we're doing, and, you know, pushing those together, because, you know, that is an added level of assurance that we want, especially with all the code that's being generated by Claude Code nowadays and by LLMs that's not being looked at. I know the amount of code that I'm crafting and actually looking at day to day has changed. For years, we've talked in the development space about test-driven development and requirements, right? Like, how that should be, right? That's the gold standard. You have to do that nowadays, right? If you're using Claude Code and you're not doing test-driven development, the likelihood that you have flaws in your code just increased exponentially, right? Because of drift, because of... yeah, whatever you want to say it is, like, you still need to look at the code at least a little bit. But I know I'm guilty of not looking at every single line of code that I'm now pushing into PRs, because it's too much for any single person to do. So I have to have something like a dry run or something else that at least is doing some sort of validation there. It's just, it's wild to me. And that's where I get both optimistic and pessimistic, because I see the... Yeah,
there's no way around that. I'm just gonna say that there's no way around that. We aren't as humans capable of keeping up with that volume. So just saying, I agree with you. Like, I know you have more to say, but I just want to stop there and just say, you can't even deny that there's no way, and there's no, you might as well go back to waterfall. If you're gonna review every PR line by line manually, yep, go back to waterfall. That's your only hope, because you have to use automation. And I don't think linting's going to cut it. I don't think regex is going to cut it. I don't think predefined patterns are going to cut it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, it's good. Let's talk about skills. Before we jump into that, though, I watched Moltbook this weekend, right? This last weekend. Did you watch Moltbook?
How intensely? I gave it about 5 minutes of my time. That's about as much as I gave.
I've got a chat with a couple people from Atreides and some other, right, like, people that we talk about AI stuff pretty much exclusively, and how it's affecting, like, the wider industry. And it's not all technical folks, like, it's people that are involved in, like, healthcare management and other things. But it popped up, and we watched it go from, I think, when we initially pulled it up and OpenClaw kind of released it and, like, things took off, to go, went from like 30 to 50,000 agents to 1.5 million over the course of 24 hours, right? Which is wild to me, right? So if you haven't seen Moltbook yet, I know we've posted about it in Slack and OpenClaw. Moltbook is a social media site for AI, right? Like, for AI agents. Now, that could be argued, because, right, like, you're basically telling an AI agent to go out and post on social media and then try to do certain things and gain followers or whatever else it is, right? But it's fascinating to see what math does and predictive analytics do on a social media site, and what sort of posts get, like, followed and promoted and other things. Anyway, like, you want to go down the rabbit hole and be very pessimistic about AI, that's probably a good place to start. So, yeah. I don't know if I want to say more to it than that, but OpenClaw is what it's based around. And that's what kind of leads us to skills and what Paul's doing, yeah, with the open source malware stuff. I was just going to drop those in there. They're interesting. research projects, I should say, or research spikes, if you want to see what's been consuming the AI world over the last week.
Yeah. Okay, where to start with skills? All right, so skills are relatively new. I'll just show it. It'll be easier than trying to explain. I'm going to use R's as an example. It's the easiest one. So this is our external plugin marketplace. So the way it works is, actually, you know what? Can I just share my, I'll show this, and then I have to switch over to my terminal. I'm wondering if I can add more. Yeah, I can. Hold on. One sec here. Nope, can't. All right. Okay, so let's just show the structure. So the reason you see standalone is this is sort of for like Cursor, Windsurf, and Codex, OpenAI's Codex, which is like Claude's equivalent, which I'm about to show Claude here in a moment and installing this, and I'll explain the benefit. But basically you have, you know, your kind of like structure where you first declare a marketplace. Now you can go on to actual marketplaces, right? They're like official marketplaces, and you can submit a skill, which I'm going to show here in a moment with Tessel. But you can consider this GitHub repo a marketplace. And so you'll add that marketplace to your AI coding assistant. And I'm just using us as an example. There's tons of marketplaces out there, meaning tons of repos with various plugins inside of the repository. And that's kind of what I wanted to mention, is that you can see we have an array of plugins, right? And that's where you define your plugins. And that's what's going to be available from that marketplace. So you can see we only have one item in our array. So there's only one skill effectively that you could pull it. So as long as all that makes sense so far, then the next part's easy. So again, the repo is the marketplace. It's defined what plugins are available. And here's the actual, like, there's a plugin definition if you care here. Sorry, go back up. This is the plugin definition, not really all that interesting. Some keywords that kick it off. But in any case, here's the actual skill. And so what do the skills do? The skills are directions for the AI coding agent. There's lots of ways to use this. There's also a notion of hooks that these AI coding assistants have, where you can say, like, at the end of, I don't know, like, they have different events, sort of like webhook events. But stop usage on a tool, or start usage on a tool, or some other breakpoint along its activity where you hook in and do something, right? So that's also a concept. But with skills, it's like, and actually I won't say the person's name, you know who you are, and I know you're listening, but this person had correctly pointed out that people kind of lost their minds when Trailbits like released a skill. But it's kind of funny because it's just a markdown file. That's all it is. Just a markdown file with directions for the AI coding agent. And they're pretty easy to put together. So this one's just sort of like talking about our process for remediating vulnerabilities. Like, you're going to see a PR comment. Here's the style of the comment. Here's how you gather context about the application to make decisions about how you're going to perform remediation, yada, 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 whatever. Gives a bunch of instructions, right? That's what you need to know. That's what a skill is. It's a markdown file with instructions. Okay. You can do more things, but that's the gist. Now, what's cool is that Tessel, which is a company by Guy Porjarny from formerly from Sneak, he created a new company. It's for AI. It's the AI agent sort of empowerment company, if you could think of it like that. And now they have a registry. And we'll talk about how that all kind of combines with Paul and Claude Bot and all that fun stuff. So his work there. So what you do is you can go to this registry and you can search for whatever. You could do like, who's an interesting, let's look for the Redpoint one, for instance. You can search for a company and see what they have for skills, for instance. So, and then you can obviously download the skills, and he basically created a registry for skills. I think that's really neat. Now, where does that sort of all land? Well, here is Paul McCarty's open source malware site, where he talks about Claudebot skills that are stealing crypto, stealing from people's crypto wallets, right? So what it does, so what happened was ClaudeBot is like a personal assistant, and you can upload skills, like I just talked about a skill marketplace, and you can pull those skills in. And these skills were specifically targeted at like crypto trader people. And that was the idea. And I think there's something that says that as much. Yeah. So the skills masquerade as cryptocurrency trading automation tools and deliver information stealing malware to Mac OS and Windows systems. And that's the gist, right? They said, okay, you want a personal assistant. It's going to help you trade. Cool. And it's not one marketplace. They actually, if I'm not mistaken, it's like some are on GitHub, some are on, I don't know, just read through here. They're scattered throughout. They actually had to do like a little bit of work to pull in the different skills, but people are pulling in these skills to ClaudeBot for AI, for crypto trading. And these skills are basically doing bad things and giving away, you know, access to like API keys and, well, yeah, all this stuff. Crypto assets like exchange API keys, wallet private keys, SSH credentials, and browser passwords. That, in a nutshell, is the new registry that now we have supply chain concerns in. And yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
Sorry, I said I'd actually show Claude. So let's actually show that. Sorry, one second here. Yeah, surprise, surprise, right? Sorry, one last thing here. So I got to go to, one second here. I got to log into, actually I have to log into our platform so I can get the commands to install these. I forgot them. All right, so yeah, so I've already got this installed, so you probably won't see anything too interesting, but when I fire up Claude, right, I can put in something like plugin marketplace add, and then you give the Oregon, the name with organization or NWO, the organization and the repo. There you go. Mm-hmm. It's already been installed. So I got an error that's already installed, like I said. And then the second command is actually installing whatever plugins are available. This marketplace could have like 10 plugins available, but I'm going to choose the remediation plugin. And again, already installed. And that's about it. So now when I open up Claude and I start doing things, the next time I go to submit a PR, what will happen is that I'll probably mention something like, hey, there's a comment from Dryrun, if there's a comment on the pull request, and it'll go and it'll actually try and like fix it, right? And it'll follow our remediation instructions. This is another weird thing where like I do question, and this is not to be like, remember I said everything's changing. You know, I do wonder about these companies who are like the auto fix remediation companies that are like, oh, well, we'll give you a custom commit and you'll have a bunch of annotations on your PR, but at least you'll have the ability of like importing those suggestions, those suggested fixes or whatever. And I'm looking at how good these tools are at fixing these flaws that get triggered by review tools, whether it's security, functional, QA, otherwise. And I'm like, how are those companies gonna fare in this space? So there's a lot. And I know we're dropping a lot of stuff on people, but just the world's moving faster than you can even keep up with at this point. Do you feel the same?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Right. Like, I mean, we've been like, I feel like we've tried to be cutting edge, but actually pretty measured about it. Right. Like what actually makes sense for us to focus on. If anything, I'm seeing more AI stuff and code be generated that we are reviewing or that's popping up into the different assessments that we do on a daily basis right now. And then we're utilizing the tools to speed up that process. When I start thinking about things like skills where it's very raw right now, I start to question, like Paul, right? Like the security that's going into these. Because what happens when you overlay multiple skills? We know that LLMs and AI has attention problems. So the second that you start loading in 5, 6, 10, 20 skills into your Claude code, what actually happens, right? Like when there are two skills that have some overlap, and are there ways that you could design a skill or a prompt to actually take advantage of that, right? And suggest pulling in additional skills and overwhelm, right? So I know I'm old, right? Like, and I know like I always like preach on these old information security principles, but it's become more and more relevant when we talk about the CIA triad, right? Confidentiality, integrity, availability, because we're crossing those boundaries so quickly, we don't realize what's actually happening out underneath the hood, right? From an integrity perspective, the second that we have multiple skills and multiple instructions that are being loaded by Claude Code or by OpenClaw, and it has access to all of these resources, what actually happens? We don't know, because there's no boundaries that we're putting into place. And then availability, right? Like, we're becoming so dependent on these agents. What happens when they're not accessible? What happens when they run out of Claude tokens or the ability to actually query the LLM, and you're like depending upon this to, you know, perform some business function? Yeah, it's like, it is. It's like when GitHub goes down, right? Like, at that point, like, there's certain tasks and certain things that I can no longer do because I'm so dependent on these agents and I'm so dependent on this process. And we haven't thought about that at all. Like, it's very rare, like, even the agents and the skills that we're doing any sort of just validation that the agent is coming from who we expected, or the skill is coming from who we expected it to come from. Is there any sort of signing process? Probably not. I'm gonna wager a guess. Probably not. So what happens? I just, like, it is wild to me. And I see that there are ways for us to secure it. We know how to do this. And maybe we have Claude Code go out and figure it out for us. But, you know, the combination of things like blockchain on top of this may be a solution that exists, that's out there, that may actually solve a lot of this for us eventually. But as of right now, we're just moving too fast. And a lot of organizations are, I don't know, I think that's where the reticence comes in to move too quickly on this front, is because highly regulated industries, highly regulated companies are going to be very risk adverse. And the risk is so huge. And it's introducing risk in places that we've been more trusted in the past, right? Our internal developers have been separated out from a lot of the risk. Yeah, we've always known that their workstation holds secrets to our individual algorithms or whatever it is. But all of a sudden, we just allowed them to install GitHub Copilot and Claude Code or Codex. And now they're using agents, and that's being sent off to places that we didn't expect. So I understand the reticence of leadership in those organizations to be like, no, guess what? We're going to hold off on that. Like, we're going to wait until there's a way
for us actually, right?
It is. You know it's happening. You know that the developers are like, ah, crap, I'm using this on all my other open source projects. I'm just going to export this code over here, right, to my personal laptop, do it, and then import it back across. There's so many new avenues for observability and tools and risks that... Yeah, threat modeling is going to become wild. I can't wait, right? Like, I can't wait to do threat models on some of this when it starts to pop up, because it's a new threat. For so long, with you know, you're following the Stride and Dread methodologies, you know, we've always had like, oh, you've got inside actors, you've got external actors, whatever it is. All of a sudden, we've got like, oh, guess what? We have AI agents now, and they are not predictable. They're not.
Yeah.
So where do we get the threats for those AI agents? Oh, we go and ask the AI agents themselves to give us what threats they could actually, it's a provenance thing, right? Like, it's wild. I guess is all I'm driving at there, Ken. It's just wild.
No, but the risks of AI backed systems, like any system that's, I can tell you, like, when you talk about the threat modeling part, I'm like, yeah, that's a real thing, because I mean, second order prompt injection exists. All the same stuff exists, right? It's just almost in some sense worse. Sometimes it can. So you really have to and this is why I go back to like, who's going to be left and how is this industry going to shake up? And I think that those that have real deep domain expertise and the ability to break down architecture and securely design architecture, you know, high level systems thinking, essentially. I think that's going to reign. I think that's going to be king and still going to be necessary. But I don't think that if your job today consists of purely taking bugs from a scanner and moving them from one system to another, you know, I don't know. So say that. And there's other areas I could point to, but I just think, like, you know, it's the if you're not here, put it this way. This is me and you shouting from the rooftops. If you're not on this path, you should get on this path because it is the world. It is the way things are. It is what it is. And if you really want to not be lost, you know, catch up really, really, really quick. That would be my advice. Because, you know, you're to your point, your engineers are using this technology most likely. Your org will be building products around this technology. And it's just so rapidly evolving. I mean, it's not week to week anymore. It's day to day. And sometimes it's multiple times a day where something new gets unlocked. I mean, we thought, I could point to a number of scenarios where as we were having the thought about a limitation, that technology came out that day or that week. And it's like, to solve that problem, we're like, this is wild. This is just wild. So yeah, everything's moving really quick. I'm, you know, to your point about being optimistic and pessimistic, I think I'm neutral right now. I mean, there's good things and bad things about all of this, but regardless of our feelings on it, the shift has happened. It's not even happening. It happened. There are just orgs that haven't caught up yet, but they will. Mm-hmm. They will soon.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to remember that we all have competitors, right? And if your competitor can build 70 new features in the time it took you to build three, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. So there's incentives around all this to lean in.
Well, and that's been the interesting thing, right? Like, so as this year has started and we're doing like new iterations of, you know, SOC audits and whatever, right? Like the discussion points that we're having with clients right now, it's like, okay, what's changed in the application? The other thing that I've added to my list is, how are you using AI? Because it's no longer are you, it's how are you, right? Is it, you know, are you exposing it through your product? Sometimes they are. It's probably about half of the clients that we deal with that there is some new like AI functionality, whether it is a chatbot and some sort of RAG, or it's some sort of like document parsing or whatever it is, right? Like within the application. But probably 90% of them are, oh, well, our developers are using Codex or Claude Code. That is the answer that I'm getting. And this is across all company sizes. To your point about like the number of pull requests that you're seeing and the increase there, it's across all organizations. From governmental to healthcare to finance to, you know, X, Y, and Z, everybody's trying to come up with a strategy on how to deal with it. So you're going to see it. If you haven't yet, like, I'd be surprised, but you're going to see it. And you've got to come up with strategies on how your organization deals with it, how you are like securing those agents, how you're securing your code, how you're testing it. There's a lot of questions to make sure that you are maintaining your level of security appropriately for your organization. A startup's probably going to move quicker because they don't have the same like legacy style applications. But I am seeing this ability using Claude and using these agents from a developer perspective to go into that legacy code and quickly update and secure it and actually uncover those holes that didn't exist previously or were considered not a priority. So anyway, it's like, it's both promising and terrifying at the same time, I guess, is my takeaway.
Yeah, it is. I will say though, man, like, you know, I know we've talked about AI a lot. I just feel like this is kind of the warning like moment. Or it's like, it's 2026. We've actually been talking about it for a few years now. But this is the moment I feel like where it's like, okay, well, to your point, most of the organizations I talk to are already in this direction. Even the big enterprises, are like, yeah, well, we don't want to lose to our competitors. So it's like, if people don't realize, you can go on Figma right now. If you already have like a mock-up, you can say, use the same design elements and make a page that has these things, right? Then you sit there, you talk to it maybe one or two times more. It'll design exactly what you need. And then what can you do? You can connect to the Figma MCP and you can say, hey, build me with that mock-up you just saw. And for people who don't understand CSS, who've never worked in React or whatever, in about 3 to 5 minutes, you can have that entire page that you mocked up using AI that took you another 2 to 3 minutes, done in about 3 to 5 minutes, and you have that page done. Do you know what that used to take? It used to take months. Okay, first we're going to have our team do specs, and then we're going to have a designer do the mockups, and then we're going to have UI UX people do this, and then we're going to have quality gates and QA. It doesn't work like that anymore. It's, I had an idea, I put it on I pushed a PR. I've relied on a bunch of bots to do like the code review because there's, you know, 500 changes in here. And, you know, here's how you do it too. In case anyone's curious, here's how we see people operating. So they'll push the PR, the reviewers will do their thing. They'll push another PR, the reviewers will do their thing. They'll put, and they'll keep doing this until they're about happy with like where the maybe the comments now are just nitpicky, or they're just not important, or they're like a won't fix or whatever. And when they get to that pristine state, they ship to prod. That's the new way to ship code. So within a morning, you can build an entire big part of your app's functionality, like legitimately. So that's why we're saying this. We're saying, hey, no more, very, very rarely will you be doing manual code review. 100% without any augments from AI.
Yep. Yeah. It's the world has changed. Both for the better, right? Like, you know, I mean, I know sometimes I come across as pessimistic and a little reticent, right? And maybe not, right? Like, but we're pretty optimistic on the use of LLMs for securing things. It is going to make, it's going to expose things that need to be exposed and secure the software quicker. It will also be used by the offensive side and by malicious actors. So we have to respond, basically. Red team, blue team, both need to utilize AI because the world has changed.
Yeah. It has indeed, sir.
It has indeed. All right. Well, we've been going for an hour. I know we could go longer. Kudos to Paul for his research on the on all of the open source malware stuff, the skills, really interesting. We will be watching that to see how they respond, because I know the initial response to the registry was pretty poor, to be honest. Like, they didn't have an answer for it, because who would push malware into a registry? Who could have foreseen this, right? I know that will change over time. I'm sure it will, because it always does. But kudos to him. And jump into Slack. Let's have a further discussion about it. I know Andrew was in there talking about the use of local LLMs or local models to alleviate some of this risk that we were talking about. I want to continue that discussion because I'm interested to hear how people are running those local models, how performant that sort of is. I know you and I are both pretty embedded into the AWS infrastructure and utilizing Bedrock for a lot of that. So I just want to continue that conversation because it's stuff I'm dealing with on a daily basis right now. And I know you are as well. So join the conversation, jump into Slack, reach out to me and Ken if you have further questions. But again, as always, appreciate the feedback, appreciate the interactions. And yeah, I think that's everything for today, unless you got anything else, Ken.
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks all. See you soon.